welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. This year has been full of news critical to farm policy. A Republican trifecta across the House, Senate, and White House that passed a sweeping budget reconciliation bill, including important agriculture provisions, sweeping tariffs imposed on the U.S.'s trading partners, and aid packages to support farmers through lost markets and low commodity prices. As we wrap up the year, we welcome two former agriculture secretaries, Dan Glickman from the Clinton administration and Mike Johanns from the George W. Bush administration, to look back at 2025 and ahead to the biggest topics of 2026. To begin, the year is wrapping up with an estimated $42 billion pumped into the farm economy through the Emergency Commodity Assistance Program and the announcement of the Farmer Bridge Assistance Program. We asked former Secretary Johanns about his view of the farm economy right now.
You know, it's always spotty. There's some areas that are good. There's some areas that are not very good at all. So if you look at our row crop people, corn and soybeans especially, it's been a tough year. We've seen some improvement in prices, a little bit of strengthening. The numbers look a little bit better for corn than they do for soybeans, but it's been a tough year. On the other hand, if you look at the proteins, not so bad. Cow-calf people have really had record year. In fact, if you talk to cow-calf people, they will say, I've never seen anything quite like this. But then you go further into the chain and not so good. And so it just varies. But I would say overall, it's not been a great farm economy in 2025, certainly hoping for better in 2026.
And Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins announced the Farmer Bridge Assistance Program payments at the White House recently, and she said that those payments are meant to provide support until a golden age of American agriculture when farmers can support themselves without relying on government payments. I'm curious from your perspective, do you think that there will be a time when farmers really don't need government assistance, and what will it take to get there?
Well, I bet if you turn the clock back, I was saying some of the same things that she's saying now, and that's been, 20 years ago. So here's the thought. I think it's possible. I think there is a day out there where farmers can farm for the marketplace. But here are some key features to that. We need markets. We need to be able to sell what we produce. We simply produce more in the United States than we consume, pretty much across all commodities. So trade is just hugely important for farmers. The second thing that I would emphasize, and I'm zeroing in on row crop people now, we need to build our biodiesel marketplace, if you will. If we could get that opened up to aviation fuel, it'd just make a huge difference. Overnight, it would be just tremendous. We did that with ethanol when I was secretary, and a week or two ago, we had a record-breaking production of ethanol. So you just have to build those markets. If they can focus on that, if they can build biodiesel, if they can open up trade opportunities for farmers, level the playing field, then that golden age could arrive and farmers could produce without having to rely on government subsidies. And that's what they want anyway. They don't want to farm for the government. They don't want to farm for a check in the mailbox. They want to farm for the market.
And you mentioned trade. Let's start there. But this most recent round of aid payments is compensating producers for loss of markets and low commodity prices due to the president's trade policy. You know, is farm country seeing the benefits of President Trump's trade policy yet? And when or will they see the benefits of those and those expanded markets internationally?
I am certain that if you went into commodity by commodity, you would find areas where you could say, hey, we're seeing benefits already. But I will also say that in certain areas, soybeans would be such a perfect example. That's been rough. China was a major, major buyer of soybeans. And until recently, they had left the marketplace. They hadn't put in any orders for soybeans. So that's changed. They're starting to buy a little bit. That's encouraging, but it's not going to solve the problem. We definitely need to open up new markets for our products. And like I said, soybeans immediately come to mind.
And you mentioned those domestic markets as well. I mean, do you think that the trade situation really presents, lawmakers have been pushing for year-round E15 and stronger biofuel policy for a long time, but do you think that the current trade situation really presents an opportunity for some of that sound biofuel policy to go into effect, maybe even early next year with the loss of export markets?
Yeah, there's a couple of reasons why I'm really emphasizing biofuels as we talk. The first one is the trade, China specifically, when you think of soybeans. But the other thing that's happened over the last 20, 25 years is Brazil, Argentina have become major, major competitors. I've been in Brazil twice in the last couple of years, and it's just unbelievable how productive they are. And again, if you focus on soybeans, it's just unbelievable what they've done. But they're also doing that in corn. We have to recognize that even if trade opportunities improve, we've got a huge competitor south of us. So it's so important to build opportunities to use our products, ethanol, biodiesel, just critically important for our future. If you really want a golden age for agriculture, you got to think about how you're going to utilize those products that we raise here, and biodiesel is a key piece of that.
We'll be back with more Newsmakers after the break.
Farm Credit supports rural communities and agriculture with reliable, consistent credit and financial services in good times and bad. We provide loans to farmers and ranchers, farmer-owned cooperatives, rural homebuyers, agribusinesses, and rural infrastructure providers. As cooperatives, we're locally owned and governed. We help agricultural producers feed the world. For America's farmers, Farm Credit, supporting rural communities and agriculture. Learn more today.
Think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. Dan Glickman served as Agriculture Secretary during the Clinton administration. We asked him about his view of the farm economy right now.
I'd say it's uncertain. The tariff situation has created a lot of uncertainty for American farmers who relied on exports, and particularly with respect to soybeans, but basically with respect to almost all commodities. We rely on being able to export our crops, and the fact that that's been monkeyed around with, and we're testing farmers' patience, because what's happening is, because of those decisions, we're forced to rely again and again on government payments in order to keep farmers alive. And I understand that, because without those payments, some farmers wouldn't survive. But, you know, you just hate to think that the future is, over the next 10, 15 years, is governed by nothing else but emergency payments every single year. I'm not sure that the public will support that over the long term.
And Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins said during the announcement at the White House that aid payments are meant to provide support until this golden age of American agriculture, when farmers can support themselves without government assistance and subsidies. You know, I'm curious, do you think there will be a time when farmers can really farm without needing this government assistance?
Frankly, I doubt it. There are always natural disasters that affect agriculture more than most segments of the American economy. Droughts, disease, floods, changes in temperature patterns. And there are always geopolitical issues like tariffs that come in that farmers are kind of victimized by. So you would like to hope that we wouldn't rely on subsidies for the rest of time. But I'm going to be candid and say that I think that we're going to need government programs for a long time. It's just that we got to keep our other policy items like tariff issues and research smartly, thinking about those things so farmers aren't always at the detriment of things outside of their control. Golden age of agriculture. I think we've had a golden age of agriculture for many, many decades in this country. Can always be better, but to be honest with you, we still provide food, nutritious food, for a hungry world, and I hope we can continue to do that.
And the most recent round of aid payments is really compensating farmers for loss of markets and the low commodity prices due to the president's trade policy. I mean, has farm country seen any of the benefits from those trade policies yet? Or, you know, when or will could they possibly?
Well, there may be some commodities that are affected positively. But for the most part, the row crop commodities, I don't think have really benefited by these programs of the Trump administration. You know, again, I'm not an expert on all of them, but here's the irony. We were going along all right, and then all of a sudden the president's announced this tariff issue. So the tariff issue blocked our sales into China. Chinese went in after Argentine and Brazilian markets and everything else. And so farmers suffered because of that. So then we have this bridge assistance, which is to correct the problem that the Trump administration caused by doing the tariffs in the first place. So it's just the height of irony of all. We've created the problem. We try to solve the problem that we created. That's got farmers pretty confused out there in the countryside. And again, I'm not saying that they don't need this assistance. Many of them do need this assistance. So some of them don't need this assistance, by the way. And we don't know, I don't know yet how the program is going to work in terms of ensuring fairness among the various commodities, wheat, corn, soybeans, rice, cotton, and whatever that may get the benefit of this thing. But it is just seems awfully odd that farmers are really getting whipsawed in this tariff situation.
We'll be back with more Newsmakers, but first, Parker Litterick looks at federal food purchasing in this week's Ag by the Numbers. Federal food purchasing plays a critical role in feeding Americans and in providing stable markets for U.S. farmers and ranchers. Much of this food supports major nutrition programs, including school meals, WIC, the Emergency Food Assistance Program, and food distribution programs serving seniors in tribal communities. According to USAspending.gov, the federal government purchased $6.9 billion in U.S. grown food and agricultural products. This chart from the American Farm Bureau Federation breaks down federal food purchasing by product category. Meat, poultry, and fish accounted for the largest share of fiscal year 2025 spending at 35%. Fruits and vegetables followed behind at 28%. Composite food packages, including ready-to-eat meals and bundled canned goods used in food aid and institutional programs, made up 12% of federal purchasing. However, under the Code of Federal Regulations, a domestic commodity or product must contain only 51% U.S. grown ingredients by weight or volume. This means that nearly half of what qualifies as a domestic food product could come from abroad. For AgriPulse, I'm Parker Litterick.
Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This critical tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back. Call your local representative.
Join us as we celebrate three decades of Commodity Classic, agriculture's largest farmer-led event, February 25th through 27th. Experience game-changing solutions, connect with thousands of forward-thinking farmers, and explore innovations from over 400 companies, all focused on powering your farm forward with efficiency and profitability. Housing and registration opens November 6th. Don't miss 30 years of agricultural excellence in the heart of Texas.
Welcome back. The high price of beef and grocery prices in general has been a major concern for President Trump at a time when the cattle sector is one of the few bright spots in the farm economy. We asked former Ag Secretary Mike Johanns if he thinks the administration can balance lowering grocery prices without hurting the cattle sector of the farm economy.
Well, what I would encourage them to do is focus on what makes a great cattle market, and that is our ability to sell the product that we raise. Cattle cycle. All of us who have been around cattle for, you know, in my case, a lifetime, you know, it ebbs and flows. And not all pieces of the cattle industry are having a good time. Quite the opposite. Cow calf, very strong, stronger than it's maybe been in history. But having said that, they've seen some awful times where everything was red. They were losing money on every calf that was born. And those days likely will come back. I hate to say that. But the truth of the matter is, this is a part of our ag industry that does ebb and it does flow. And we're at a point now where it's very strong for parts of the cattle industry, but that will change. The herd will rebuild, and then all of a sudden beef prices will come down. So if I were in the administration, I would just say, look, agriculture does this. It does ebb and flow. Let's do the things that are important to build the marketplace, biodiesel, ethanol, trade opportunities, just to name a few.
And Deputy Ag Secretary Stephen Vaden said the USDA reorganization will be complete by the end of 2026. You know, I'm curious, what impact could that broad reorganization have and the potential loss of staff have on the department? And what will you be watching through this process in 2026?
Well, my hope is that it will bring services, bring expertise closer to the farmer, to the rancher. That's the whole idea. Why does the USDA need employees in Washington, D.C.? Well, there's a need for some. But doesn't it make sense to have the science and the other parts of USDA in other parts of the country where our agriculture is at? So I'm watching it carefully. I'm very interested. But it did occur to me when I was Secretary of Agriculture that the home office, being Washington, D.C., was too big. So they are really following up on something that I was very concerned about myself. Why not get these services out into the country?
And as we wrap up here, Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins is approaching a year on the job. If you could give her a grade on her job, her work so far, and then any advice for her going into 2026.
I don't know where she finds the energy. I mean, she's just nonstop. I'll open up my laptop in the morning, and I'll start reading that she's another part of the world. And then 2 days later, she's back in the United States. I mean, she is nonstop. She's doing everything she can for agriculture. But of course, she has a boss. I had a boss, you know, and that boss is in the Oval Office. So you have to constantly pay attention to this. But here would be my advice. Continue what you're doing because you're doing a great job, but also focus on what can I do to help open additional markets. Trade is so critical for agriculture. We produce more than we can consume. Do everything you can to build the ethanol and the biodiesel markets with heavy emphasis on biodiesel. We need to find opportunities for our soybean producers, and that's just going to make a huge difference. And then continue your focus on bringing agriculture out of Washington, D.C., bringing it to where the farmers and ranches are at. So I think she's definitely on the right track. I think she's an enormously hard worker. She understands agriculture. And those would be the things that I would encourage as we start thinking about 2026.
We'll be back with more Newsmakers after the break.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources. This
is my sustainability story.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of our space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Successful Farming presents the 15 Minutes with a Farmer podcast. In each episode, a successful farming editor has a quick conversation with a farmer, chock full of stories and advice from their area of agriculture. They're interesting, educational, and perfect for your busy schedule. Search for 15 Minutes with a Farmer wherever you download your podcasts.
Welcome back. Deputy Ag Secretary Stephen Vaden said the USDA reorganization will be complete by the end of 2026. We asked former Ag Secretary Dan Glickman what impact the broad reorganization and potential loss of staff could have on the department and what he will be watching through the process in 2026.
I guess my feeling is it's actually working pretty well, the administration of programs. Most of our employees are out in the field now, you know, kind of running a variety of the programs to make sure that farmers are well treated. I always worry about this reorganization. Every administration comes in and wants to reorganize, whether it's the farm program, push employees out into the countryside, where most of our employees are at USDA or in the countryside. They're not in Washington. And so I'm suspicious of this massive reorganization plan. Now, it could work out fine. I guess I'm not aware of all the details of it. But I know that when we, in the earlier Trump administration, when we moved a lot of the employees out in the research areas and everything else, a lot of employees left, talent left. They just got out of the government. And that's not a good thing. The one thing I would have to say is, I hope, you know, I noticed they're closing a lot of the research facilities in the Beltsville lab. The great jewel of the Department of Agriculture are its research facilities. The ability to find new technologies, crops that can resist disease, animals that can resist disease, crops that yield more, all those kinds of things. You just worry that just moving people around is going to impact that negatively.
Yeah, we've touched on quite a bit during our conversation, but as we look to 2026, I guess, what concerns you most about American agriculture and farm policy right now? And, you know, what's a bright spot as you look to the new year?
Well, I mean, fortunately, the bright spot is that we've got a talented group of farmers and ranchers out there. Particularly, we're seeing more and more younger farmers get into this business or get into collateral businesses related to agriculture. People are finding that, you know, for years and years, I always felt that policymakers who weren't involved in agriculture could care less about it. You know, it was always lower priority. I don't think that's true anymore. I think people care about the quality of their food. They care about production techniques. They care about diet and nutrition. And so there's a lot of attention to food and agriculture that we never really saw before. And that means that people who aren't involved on a day-to-day basis in food and agriculture are getting exposed to how important this industry is for America. And I guess what worries me about it is that, you know, these things can't change on a dime. And, you know, coming in and saying, okay, we're going to put 50% or 25% tariffs on China, and overnight, Chinese stopped buying American products. We should be anticipating those problems and knowing that agriculture is often the first group that's to their detriment that these things happen. So I'm still optimistic. We still produce enough food, not only to feed ourselves, but a big chunk of the world. I just want to make sure that American products have access to world markets. Because if we shut off global markets, if we shut off our ability to export for whatever reason, and maybe some of the efforts by the president on tariffs may make sense, I don't know. But if we shut off our access, then that's a direct dagger in the heart of farm income.
We'll be back with more newsmakers. But first, Andrew Honecke looks at biogas systems across the country in this week's Map It Out.
There's an opportunity for the biogas sector to keep increasing in the U.S. There are more than 11,000 farms nationwide that could be potential digester sites based on industry estimates. This map shows each of the 2,500 biogas systems across the country, according to the American Biogas Council. Those systems include 600 manure-based digesters on farm, marked in green, 1,200 water resource recovery facilities, marked in light blue, 580 landfill gas projects, marked in purple, and roughly 110 standalone food waste digesters, marked in orange. The number of digesters on farms has doubled in the past 10 years, mainly due to federal and state-level incentives to reduce emissions and strengthen domestic energy production. If you're interested in learning more, you can watch one of our recent webinars on our YouTube channel, The Race for Renewable Fuels to Improve Rural Prosperity. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Honecke.
Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This critical tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back. Call your local representative.
Join us as we celebrate three decades of Commodity Classic, agriculture's largest farmer-led event, February 25th through 27th. Experience game-changing solutions. Connect with thousands of forward-thinking farmers and explore innovations from over 400 companies, all focused on powering your farm forward with efficiency and profitability. Housing and registration opens November 6th. Don't miss 30 years of agricultural excellence in the heart of Texas.
Check out our full lineup of Successful Farming podcasts. The Successful Farming podcast goes in-depth into the topics that affect farmers and ranchers. The 15 Minutes with a Farmer podcast offers a quick conversation between an editor and a farmer. The SF Shorts podcast offers bite-sized interviews about agricultural topics. And the SF Daily podcast covers commodity markets, weather, and the big things happening in agriculture each morning. Search for Successful Farming wherever you download your podcasts.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Both the House and Senate are out of session until January 5th. Tune in next week for a special episode looking back at influential ag policy decisions made this year. And check our website anytime for the latest developments in all things food, farm, and fuel policy. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.